Welcome to the Arran Church podcast, where our mission is bringing life to everyone, everywhere, every day. Each podcast episode features the latest talk from our church, which are released weekly. We're passionate about Jesus, love to worship together, and are committed to changing our community for the better. Connect with us at arranchurch.com. Morning, everybody. Thank you. How are we all doing? Yeah, good. Everyone's a bit quiet today, but the kids are out, so we'll say it's that. We'll not say that people have turned off. We'll begin. So this morning I'm continuing on our fantastic series on roots and wings. And last week, wasn't it fantastic? What a treat to have Josh with us and speaking to us last week, and he started our new subsection on new growth. So I'm going to be continuing that, and I'm looking at how we are rooted in the Bible. So Josh spoke last week and he talked about our foundations. He talked about building foundations, and one of the things that he said was we need to build with intention. Foundations don't just happen accidentally. Foundations don't just happen without any planning or without any action. So he was saying we need to be intentionally building our foundations. So we are looking at how are we rooted in the Bible? How are we intentionally growing in understanding the Bible more? So in Hebrews 4:12, it says, "For the word of God is alive and active. It's sharper than a double-edged sword. It penetrates even to dividing soul and spirit, joint and marrow. It judges the thoughts and attitudes of my heart." So what is this book, the Bible? What is this book that will divide and penetrate to the very core of my being, the very core of who I am? How is this Bible, how is this book, this bunch of letters on a page, going to physically affect, physically change my body? How is it going to alter the way that I see the world, alter the way that I think and feel about everything? How is this book that was written thousands of years ago still relevant today? How has it not been overtaken by modern philosophy? How is it still the most the highest selling book every year, year on year, even now, thousands of years after it was written? How is even the Bible app one of the most downloaded apps that there is? How is this still relevant? There must be something in this, something that we need to grab a hold of. Now, Genesis, the book of Genesis, begins with people living at peace in a garden with a tree and a river. And Revelation talks about the end time with people living at peace with a tree and with a river. And we here today in Littlehampton right now are living between these two trees, between these two periods of time. We're living right here. And so the Bible is not about heaven and how we get there, but the Bible is about how we as humans live right now. The Bible is about how we go through our life right now. It's about how we continue to bring new life here on earth, how we continue to bring healing and restoration and reconciliation and restoring and renewing all things now. As we dive into the Bible stories, the stories that people, human beings who were inspired by God, as they wrote down their stories, we then discover our own stories. It was about them then, a long time ago, but yet somehow it impacts us right now here in our lives. You see, the Bible is not just a book. The Bible is an entire library. The Bible is an entire library. It was written by over 40 different people, and their writings spanned across 1,500 years, roughly. And in there is songs and there is poetry. In there's letters and there's historical accounts. In there's prophecies and people pouring out their hearts to God, in there, there is the same issues that we experience today, even though it was from a very long time ago. There's people writing about their anger, writing about betrayal, writing about love, writing about their duty, writing about shame, writing about hope. All of these themes are still relevant to us today. The Bible is a record of the human experience. The Bible is not just for Christians. The Bible is for humanity, and we need to get hold of this book and understand it and let our roots grow deeper in it, because the Bible is at the core of what it means to be a human. So why, when something, it says that in Psalms that the Bible is as precious as gold, the Word of God is as precious as gold. So why something that's so important to the human existence, so essential, so has so much wisdom and gold in there, why is it a bit boring to read? Why is it really hard to understand some of the stories and understand what is going on? Why is some of the things really jarring and you think, I don't know if that's okay? Why is it that some of the things feel a bit outdated? When I was on a gap year, I didn't have many gap years. When I was on my gap year, I went to live in Uganda. And when I was in Uganda, here's a couple of examples of things that happened. I made a really good friend and I lived with her, and she was Ugandan and her name was Stella. And Stella said to me one day, oh, Kat, you're really... And then she used a Lugandan word to describe me. And I was like, what? Well, what does it mean? What do you mean I'm really... I can't even remember what the word was. What does that mean? Tell me. And she said, oh, there isn't an English translation for it. And I was like, oh, well, describe it in English. Tell me some words. And she was like, well, it's a bit like this, but not quite. Maybe with a little bit of this and a bit more like that. And I was like, this is so annoying. And I spent the rest of my time, every Ugandan person that I met, I said, do you know this word? What does it mean? And they were like, oh, well, there isn't a word for it. There just isn't a word for it. And I was like, well, describe it to me. And they'd say, well, it's kind of like this, but it's a bit more like that. And it also can mean this. And they all used to use different words to describe it. And I had never experienced that a language has no direct translation into another language. The Bible was written in Hebrew and Greek, and the words that they use, it is translated brilliantly into English. It's translated brilliantly, but there are some things that you just can't translate. There are some things that you just can't get the exact words for. In Hebrew and Greek, there's about six or more different words to describe love. Different types of love, what love means, in which context, what kind of love. In English, we just have love. You can't always translate the exact thing that the author was trying to get at. Another experience I had in Uganda was my group of Ugandan friends, they said to me, oh, this woman who was a sweet English old lady, there was a missionary in Uganda and had been a missionary a really long time, they said, she is the rudest woman I've ever met. And I was like, this sweet little lady that's been a missionary her whole life. Yeah, she is the rudest woman we have ever come across. And I was like, are we talking about the same person? Tell me why she's rude. Tell me, what does she do that's rude? And they were like, well, you know, her role was for the liaison between the children and their child sponsors. So like all the correspondence that went back and forth, it was her job to sort out. So they'd say, we'd go to her house, we'd go and we're going to get our letters from our sponsors. And when we get there, she stands at the door and gives us the letters. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Tell me again why she's rude. And they would tell me the exact same story. And I was like, oh, could you just explain it to me? Because I'm really not getting why you think she's the rudest person you've ever met. Like, what should she be doing? And they say, when someone comes to your house, you let them in. You don't stand at the threshold not letting them through. You welcome them into your home. You give them tea. You give them food. You talk to them. You ask them about their day. You ask them everything. You never ask them why they've come to see you. You never end the socializing with what you're, with what she's, she wants it to be over because she's just giving us what we've come for. And I was like, oh, I see. I don't think she knows that. I don't think she's deliberately being rude and disrespectful. In England, we don't like to waste people's time. We like to be efficient. She is thinking, you're coming. I know you're coming to get your letters. I'll just get them ready. She's getting them ready. And then she's coming and giving them to you like, here's what you came for. Here it is. There you go. There. She's trying to be kind. She's trying to be loving. She's trying to not waste your time. She doesn't want to be a burden. She doesn't want to take up anything extra than she needs to take up. There is a mismatch across the cultures of what was going on there. And that is similar in the Bible. There's certain things that were happening in the cultures at the time. Some of the letters are written by a Jewish man who's writing in a Greek language, who's living under Roman rule. There is so much going on there before we've even read what the letter says. There is so much background noise and so much going on without even understanding the very black and white words that are written there. Sometimes we can have a word like, if I was writing and talking about education or schooling, everyone here, we would know that education and schooling is from when you're five. It's a legal obligation. You don't have to pay for it. You don't get a choice. You have to go. And it's up until about the age of 18. At the end, you sit exams and you come out with qualifications. And those qualifications are really important. And you need your English and you need your maths in order to get jobs moving on in life. So we know all of that by me just saying the word education. So something so simple as that doesn't need me to explain all of that in the context. And often that's what happens in the Bible. A single word, they don't need to explain and spell it out what that single word implies, because everybody who was reading the letter, everybody who was hearing that story knows what that word implies. Just like if I was telling a story about education, I don't need to explain what it is. We all know what it implies. In the Bible, it talks about different stages of Christianity, so I'm just going to briefly go over it. There is stage one, the baby Christian. So the baby Christian, when Paul was writing to a brand new church in Corinth, he says, I gave you milk as you were babies. He didn't physically mean he gave them like a pint of milk. He meant the teaching that I gave you was like milk. It was easy for you to digest because you were like babies. Now, let me tell you about my baby. My baby, he's one now. The other day, I sat the kids down watching a movie with a bag of popcorn. I turned away to get on with some jobs. Turned back, and my baby had tipped the share-sized bag of popcorn all over the living room floor. Great. I'll stop what I'm doing. I'm just going to go and tidy up that popcorn. In the time it took me to tidy up the popcorn, Coin had then gone to the cereal drawer and got out several Weetabix, put them on the floor, and was really enjoying the crunching sound under his feet. So then I was like, oh, Coin, would you just sit still? So then I got the dustpan and brush, cleaned up the Weetabix. Whilst I was cleaning up the Weetabix, he grabbed my favourite mug off the table and smashed it on the floor, and he cut his hand. So I stopped cleaning up the Weetabix, went and got a plaster, picked up all the shards so no one else can get hurt, plastered him up, and then I turned around, and when I was picking up all the shards, he just tipped a whole box of Monopoly on the floor, and I just thought, I'm not tidying that up, and I just left it there for the rest of the day because I was done. So babies make mess. Babies need constant supervision. Babies get easily hurt. So when I'm talking about a baby Christian, you can be a baby Christian and you can be in your 70s. A baby Christian is somebody who's right at the very beginning of their faith. And things like Alpha are perfect because it gives you really hard concepts in really easy to understand ways. And like Hayley and Kieran were saying, even if you're really experienced Christians, I don't know. Even if you've been a Christian for a long time, still that really easy to understand teaching is really good. So babies, they need easy to understand teaching. They need protecting. They need guiding. They need supervising. They need supporting. The next stage of Christianity is children. The child. Stage two is the child age. Now, children. Children need lots of praise and encouragement. Children need cheerleading and supporting. Children need their hands holding. So they might not need milk anymore, but they still need easy, digestible teaching. Children need, when I was a child, physically, I did like Bible time with my parents. So it was a day-to-day, like a word for the day, but for kids. A daily reading that was easy to understand, that was applicable. That's the child stage of faith. The next stage is stage three, young adult stage of faith. And young adults are self-sufficient, but they're yet to encounter many things that happen in life. In Proverbs, it says, the glory of a young man is his strength. So young adults, they can motivate themselves. They can discern between good and evil, what's right and wrong. They don't need the same. They don't need cheerleading anymore. They're self-sufficient. If you imagine someone kind of going off to uni, they can live by themselves. They can cook, they can clean, they can feed themselves. They'll be safe, but they're yet to experience many things in life. So they're yet to experience many things on their journey with Christianity. And the final stage of Christianity is the stage four, which is mothers and fathers. In Thessalonians, it says, just as a nursing mother cares for her young, so we have cared for you. Because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but share our lives. So mothers and fathers have built firm foundations, not over a short time, over a long time. And mothers and fathers continue to build their foundations, but they also clean up mess. Mothers and fathers support the children and the babies of faith. They resource them. They give them their time. They give them their energy. Mothers and fathers aren't mess makers. Mothers and fathers gather and protect and clean up the mess. So we are all in this room at different stages of this faith. And just to be clear, it is nothing to do with age. You can be at different stages of the faith, no matter what age, that you are at. So when we're at different stages, we interact with the Bible and we read the Bible in different ways. When I was, I remember when I was a child, I would read the Bible. Like I said, my parents would read it with me. But I remember the first time that God gave me a Bible verse. I was at a kids camp, and we were praying about things that were bothering us. And I was going to a new school, and I was really stressed about it and worried about friendships. And a Bible verse dropped into my head, and I opened my Bible and read it. And it said, you can go to the highest mountain or the lowest valley, but I will be with you, so fear not. And in that moment, I knew that it didn't matter about going to the new school. God was with me. Whether I was scared or whether I was having a great time, God was with me. That was a childlike faith. That was me plucking one verse out and using it for encouragement. And that is okay to do. But when you are an adult or when you're a mother and father, you need to dive deeper in the Bible. You can't just grow roots by staying on the milk stage or staying on the childlike stage. You need to grow your roots deeper. The Bible is the most incredible piece of literature because you can paddle in it. You can paddle in the shores. You can pick verses. You can go on your Bible app and read the verse for the day and be encouraged. Or you can swim in it. You can read stories and try and get to understand the parables and see what Jesus is saying and applying it to your life. You can snorkel. You can dive a bit deeper and explore what were the original words? What was God trying to say? What was this writer trying to say at this time? Or you can deep dive in it and you can go to the depth of the ocean because you will never reach full understanding of the Bible. I want to ask you today, where are you at in the four stages? Where are you at in your faith and in your journey? And are you moving forward? Or have you just stayed at the same point for a long time? Are you feeding yourself? Are you intentionally growing your foundations? Or are you staying where you are? When we're reading the Bible, there are many ways there, we can interpret it incorrectly, and we can sometimes read it wrong, but there's lots of ways to read it right. It's a bit like if there's music playing and people are just dancing, everybody's dancing to the music. Nobody's doing it wrong, but every time the music plays, you dance a different way. Unless everyone's doing a slightly different thing at different times, and that's okay. That's how we dance and interact. When we're reading the Bible, we need to look at it and notice the detail. Notice the things that jar and you think, what? That doesn't make sense. Why doesn't it make sense? Ask the questions. Does it not make sense because we don't understand the crucial words at the culture at the time? Does it not make sense because the writer on purpose is making it not make sense, so it jars, so we unpick what that means? Sometimes you need to fly really close to the story and unpick the words. And sometimes you need to fly really high and look at the pattern of what's happening. Why is that story there in the middle of all these other stories? What is the writer trying to tell us from this thing that kind of stands out and doesn't really fit right? In Jewish culture, they ask questions. And I was doing this exercise this week in preparation for this, where I was reading a story that I knew really well in the Bible. And rather than just reading it, everything I was asking a question. Well, what does that mean? Why did they do that? What does that? And then when I did it the first time through, then I went back to the beginning and did it again. And the second time I had way more questions. And then the third time I had even more questions, because the more I was unpicking, the more I was unearthing, the more I was seeing, what is going on here? What is God trying to say? In rabbinic culture, there's this rabbi, I can't remember his name, but he was talking about reading the Torah and it being a gem, and it's got 70 faces. And every time you turn the gem, every time you turn the crystal, it shines and the light looks different, and it shows you something new and something different every single time. And that is why with the Bible, you could be a theologian studying the Bible your entire life and you're never going to get there. There is always more. There's always new light, new levels, new ways to read it. The band, I'm ready for you guys to start to come back up. You see, God is interested in doing something new. When we read the Old Testament, I've heard before people saying like the Old Testament God is different to the New Testament God. That's like a term I've heard people saying. But actually what was different was the people. The culture and the human understanding and human existence at the time was vastly different to the New Testament. So how they lived in tribal survival ways was massively different to the New Testament. God was doing something new in the Old Testament. Those stories that were violent and brutal, God was changing their thinking into bringing in new thoughts. Then in the New Testament, Jesus constantly challenged people. He challenged the religious leaders to be thinking in a different way. He was bringing a new way. How are we rooted in the Bible? How are we now thinking and interacting and engaging with it? Are we open to what the Spirit is saying now? Is our hearts open to grace and the new thing that God is doing in humanity now? Are we hungry to be transformed and to keep being transformed and to keep growing and to keep digging and to keep going deeper in what God has for us? How are you rooted in the Bible? We're going to spend time this week in our life pods looking at what stage of Christianity we feel that we're at, and looking at how we day to day, week to week, year to year interact with the Bible, and how we can then push ourselves into moving forward and choosing intentionally to build our foundations. So just as the band play, we're just going to take some time and we're going to have communion. I just wanted to just encourage you to just pause and just think about this incredible gift that we've got. God gave us the Bible so that we can understand his heart and his love for us, his love for us. And he gave us this tool that we can dig and we can delve into and we can explore. But how are we choosing to use it and interact with it? How are we choosing to read it? So I'm just going to pray, and then during this song, feel free to take communion either by yourselves or with the person next to us. God, I thank you for your love. I thank you that your heart is always to connect with us. I thank you that you are a father, that you are a mother, that you are the person who that supports and encourages and watches over our mess making, God. And I thank you for the sacrifice, Jesus, that you made on the cross in order that we have no barrier. No barrier between us and you, that we can have this relationship. So God, as we take communion now, Father, help us to continue to delve deeper in our relationship with you. Help our roots to grow deep. God, inspire us to want to go there, God. Soften us so that our hearts are open to grace and love and not fixed in a religious mindset, but open to what you are saying and what you are doing. Thank you for the gift of Jesus, and thank you for the gift of the Bible. Amen.